welcome to this early show. You're listening to Ray and Tay Today, and I'm Ray. That's Tall Rayside.
And I'm Tay, Eric Taylor. Give us a call. Join the ride. Let's have some fun. Football, college hoops. Let's do it. 718-664-9098. Like always, hit us up at rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. We do get your questions and comments on the air sometimes. And like always, check out our website, interactive, rayandtaytoday.com. A lot of fun. Hit us up on YouTube. Check out our YouTube channel at Ray and Tay Today and subscribe to us. Same as at Ray and Tay Today on Twitter and Facebook. Ray, let them know, man. We're going to get into it. Let's do it.
Yeah, we got a lot to talk about, so let's start with the breaking news. We got an injury in the NFL affecting the Broncos. We've got this whole mess with A-Rod, continual saga, chapter 25 of the A-Rod saga. We'll get into this Final Four weekend in the NFL. We're down to four teams, so Sunday night we got the AFC and the NFC Championship games. We'll talk about these four great games that we had this weekend. We'll bring you our new segment, apropos football, called Where's My Rings, NFL style. So we'll bring you some great, great, great NFL players that don't have rings. And for all you young listeners out there, we'll bring you some old school folks that you need to look up on YouTube or on any other social media and get educated on these guys. Just because they don't have a ring doesn't mean they're not great players. So
That's right. Where's my ring?
And then we'll end the show, the second half of the show. We'll talk about the NCAA AP Top 25. There's been some serious movement. There's four undefeated teams in Division I. We'll talk about that. And then we'll take a dribble and a spin and around your back to the hoop around the NBA. So we'll do that in the second half of the show. But the first half of the show, we'll get into some football. So first let's start with, it was just revealed, Chris Harris out, torn ACL. So Broncos.
The Broncos, the corner.
Yep, another guy goes down. But you know what? They're going to be facing a New England team that's been dealing with a lot of adversity this year, too. So we'll get into much more of that on Friday. But let's just get it out of the way. Let's talk about A-Rod. Baseball reduced, the arbitrator reduced his suspension from 211 to 162 games, which means all of the 2014 season. And there was this Tony Bosch interview on 60 Minutes last night. So real quick, I'm sure this will linger on, but what are your initial thoughts on A-Rod and where he should be next year?
You know, listening to Tony Bosch and him describing, you know, how he personally injected him and, you know, their secret code and text going back and forth and he, you know, getting the cream and doing this to, you know, how to beat the system. He said it was a cakewalk and it was easy. And, you know, getting, I guess, intimate details. And then, you know, it worked because that game he had, you know, two runs driven in, a double, or this and that. I think it's annoying and it's disgusting. And I don't want to be Pollyanna or a purist, but I'm tired of it. You know, it's 162 games, and then I just hope he retires. I just hope it's over. And I as a Yankee fan, I don't want him anymore. I don't want to see him. He wanted to get 800 home runs, and he wanted to do it by cheating, and it's annoying. And I'm sort of done, to be honest with you. And I'm someone that always stood up for A-Rod and always liked A-Rod and wanted to give him a second chance. But when you sort of do this to the fans and the listeners and all these people and lie over and over again, people get exhausted with it and we're just done. So for me, Tay is done and A-Rod, goodbye. Thank you.
Well, you can. This is the problem though in pro sports is that this is a guaranteed contract. So even if he goes to a federal panel and the federal jury or federal judge won't overturn this arbitrator's decision, which they almost never do, because why would you agree to arbitration if you don't accept the ruling of the arbitrator? So apparently federal judges don't like to intervene. A-Rod still has $70 million or so left on his contract after this year. So nobody's going to sit around and let $70 million just go away. Now, the Yankees might be able to buy him off and come to some kind of agreement, but A-Rod's going to get paid. So
they'll get something, but
A-Rod's not going away, though. A-Rod's a kind of stubborn, you know, athlete that isn't just going to go away and retire, and especially not leave $70 million on the table. So, I mean, that's money for a lifetime, even though A-Rod's made much, much more than that in his career. So, unfortunately, this isn't the last we've heard of A-Rod in the physical, in the courts, and also on the baseball field. He's coming back. Even if it's 2015, he'll be back. Too much money on the table.
Hey, I got something to entertain and make people smile and to be happy. We had two, you know, films that were really big last night in the Golden Globes. 71st Annual. Makes me feel old and young at the same time. You had American Hustle, won Best Film in the, I don't know how they separate the categories. And then Best Drama was 12 Years a Slave. And I think American Hustle won Best Comedy / whatever. So congrats to those two films, 12 Years a Slave, Hurt, they're both great, and American Hustle. And I was surprised, and I just gotta say this, get it off my chest. I'm making my votes for the SAG Awards, but the Golden Globes is the only one that does television and film together. So it's sort of great, and they got their drinks and limited foods. Everybody's a little loosey-goosey, and you know, Amy Poehler won for comedy actress, right? So I thought that was great for Parks and Recreation. But no diss to Andy Samberg and Brooklyn Nine-Nine, but I don't think he's funny, and that show to me is horrible. It's unwatchable, and I'm surprised that it beat out Martin Family and some of the other shows. It's just not funny. So
Modern
I had to
Family's
get that
hilarious.
Off my chest.
And I think what happens with
great.
A show like
great.
That is almost like I equate it almost to Bill Belichick and, you know, a guy like Phil Jackson. You know, they could win Coach of the Year every year.
Every year,
so Modern
yeah.
Family could win Best Comedy every year. So maybe
yeah.
it's just a matter of the voters getting tired of just being robots
yeah.
and filling in Modern Family.
But there's other shows, and so, maybe it's, you know, I only watched it once, maybe I need to give it another try, but I don't think so. It really irritated me and annoyed me, and so that's my spiel on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. You know, I wanted to watch it just because of the title, Brooklyn. I'm like, yo, I got to watch this. It's Brooklyn, but no, it's really not. It's silly. But so I thought that was great, and, you know, you saw, you know, the guy from Breaking Bad won Best, you know, Actor, and so it's fun. Film and TV is fun. And Ray and Tay, we like to talk about it. We see, you know, some of the films. I thought Meryl Streep would have won for, you know, August and Sage County. She was great in that film, but she didn't. But, you know, hey, Jennifer Lawrence wins again, man. This girl's hot, Ray. Jennifer Lawrence is hot, and she's going to be in Dumb and Dumber 2. You ready for that?
Really?
With Jim Carrey, yeah. So, just a little something.
Another money-making venture.
So before we get to
about...
before we get to the football, let me ask you, and also Wisenhunt is looking like he might get the Lions job. No words yet. The Browns are interviewing Munchak. But I wanted to ask you.
Well, not
you,
so fast, because they're saying Wisenhunt might go down to take Munchak's job. Munchak's old job. He might go down to Tennessee.
The Titans. Yeah. But they like Dan Quinn, too. So this.
Well,
the problem is
if Dan Quinn wins, they won't be able to talk to Dan Quinn until 3 weeks from now. The defensive coordinator for the Seattle.
I think they do get to talk the week in between.
No. I don't think so. I think I think last week was the week to talk to coordinators, and if you didn't lock up the deal last week, you can't touch them until if they're still playing. You can't touch them until after the Super Bowl.
Okay, so we'll see. If they're being patient, it's just like the Broncos coordinator guess. If they're being patient, we'll see why because of these guys. But before we jump into the review of these games, why don't you tell everybody what Vegas thinks with the opening lines for the AFC and NFC championships, because I think it's interesting.
So I was a little surprised. You told me that the opening line, Broncos favored by 5, and this is before the Harris injury was revealed.
Right, so that might change.
So that probably affects that line a little bit. And then the other line is 3, so Seattle is a 3. And usually if teams are about equal, then you're looking at 2 to 3 points.
Yeah, I think it opened at 3.5.
Home field
advantage. It might be 3.5.
3.5,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No,
so we'll talk
gonna
more
be
on Friday as we preview these
two games
and give you our scores.
So the Broncos, man. I mean, let's go there first. look, congrats, because this Monday last year, we were going crazy about that play. We had Seth Davis on the show. He even commented about the play. One thing you can't do is let the guy get behind you. So they survived the first, you know, playoff win for Manning as a Bronco, 24-17. It got sketchy for a minute, but they got the big first down to Julius Thomas. I thought that was big in the game. And the one thing that I took from this game, you know, I like what Moreno was able to do. He got the touchdown and 23 carries. That's what they need to beat the Patriots. They got to run the ball 82 yards. At some point, though, Ray, I think Monty Ball is going to have to get his assets in order and contribute. I think they're going to need him. I think he's a little bit more dynamic than O'Shawn Moreno. And I know there's a fear factor because he's fumbled a lot like Ridley did for the Patriots. But I think to win a Super Bowl and possibly to beat the Patriots, it's not just going to be Moreno. I think Ball, you know, had 10 carries, 52 yards, so that's pretty good.
Between the two of them, they got 33 carries. So I don't know that they'll give Monty Ball the
– too much more.
Too much more. Maybe at the goal line, but they are scared of him fumbling, especially in a critical game. So I think he'll be the change of pace from O'Shawn Moreno. And I think Moreno's better in the pass game anyway. So
better pass blocker, definitely. Yeah.
I look at this, and a pass receiver too. So I look at this as if the game were to have ended at the end of the third quarter, they'd be very, very happy, the Broncos.
Right.
But ultimately, playing that fourth quarter may be a blessing in disguise because it may have been too easy. And you almost want to face adversity because chances are Belichick and his Patriots are going to throw some wrinkles at you, and you might be down, and you might have to play in some weird, you know, catch-up situation or do some four-minute offense or what have you. So that stress and adversity that they had to go through, I think, helps them this week. And, you know, the Broncos were coming off of 2 weeks. You know, they had the bye, just like the Patriots did. But for some reason, they seemed not as in sync.
Sharp.
Yeah. And remember that comment that we had last week, which is that the Broncos offense was held under 400 yards twice this year, and both times were the San Diego Chargers. So give the Chargers and Pagano credit. The defensive coordinator, they have Denver's number, and they know how to contain him. They don't shut him down, but they certainly keep him in the 20s, right?
Well, you got to tackle,
and
that's what they did. Look at Welker, 6-for-38. So as soon as he's catching the ball, he's down on the ground, you know, and that's what they did mainly with Demaryius. Julius Thomas was the one, I think, you know, that got 12 yards of reception. 76 receiving yards for 6 grabs. So that's sort of what you got to do. Let me ask you this real quick, though. What did you think about his first red zone interception of the season when they were driving down and Manning?
Oh, Manning?
He had 2 touchdowns but threw the 1 interception.
That wasn't his fault. That wasn't his fault. That was right off Decker's chest.
Had
caught that. That was unfortunate. And, in fact, that saved the game for San Diego because it was 10-0. At the half, 14, right? It was 14-0. Had they
scored
there,
and that's what made it 17. Yeah,
it would have been 21, and that's it. The game would have been over. 17-0 at the half would have been over. So I think that one play was definitely not Peyton's fault. It was all on Decker for not catching it with his hands. So I don't really even look at that as a real interception. I mean, obviously.
You have to give Denver's defense credit, too, Ray, because I think, and this is what I was surprised about, that he even started, but he was only 5 for 26 for Ryan Matthews. The ankle was banged up, so we'll see him next year and hope he can get healthy. And Denver's defense showed up. I think that they really locked Rivers, only 217 yards. And you hope they can play this strong against Blunt and Ridley and Brady and the Patriots, because Denver's defense showed up. I think Harris is going to be missed, but maybe Champ Bailey steps back up and is not sticking the slot receiver and is back on the outside. So we'll see.
Yeah, the good thing is that Denver can take solace in the fact that New England doesn't have anybody to blow the top off the defense, so there's no Randy Moss, there's no Gronkowski up the middle. So in that respect, you focus on the run, You keep them contained, and then you hope that on the outside you have enough talent to keep Edelman and the other receivers.
Amendola.
Amendola.
Tompkins.
And Tompkins banged up a little bit. Where was he? You know, so I don't know. These guys, you know, again, talent, they're not going to beat you with talent. They're going to beat you with scheme. And I think that if you can shut the run down and pressure Brady up the middle, then you have a good, good chance of stifling this New England offense. But then again, you give you give Belichick a couple weeks to prepare. And you know he was preparing for the Patriots, right? Even though deep down he would never admit that he was overlooking the Colts, you know.
Oh, preparing for the Broncos. Yeah, no, definitely.
There, preparing for the, sorry, for the Broncos.
Yeah.
So,
No,
it'll
you're
be
right.
A great matchup. It's going to be the 14th time that they've played regular season and postseason, Manning versus the Patriots and Brady, and Brady's 10-4. So we'll see who wins next
week.
And this
will be the fourth time
they're
playing
matchup.
In a championship game to go to the Super Bowl, so that's going to be amazing.
Yeah,
so.
And that's 2-1 to the Patriots so far.
Yeah. So let's move on. The Niners, I mean – Panthers had them 10-6, and then, you know, things went awry. I think even getting that first field goal, that pass interference call was horrible. Felt bad for the Panthers. I think Cam showed himself well, played a pretty good game. We spoke, you know, off-air about it. I just think this kid needs so much help, and he doesn't have anything. And, you know, come to find out that he wanted to go up the middle with the run. On the goal line, I thought it was a bad move. I would have either handed it off, or I think they should have just got the points and kicked the field goal. In a defensive battle like this, you gotta put points up. And I think that, you know, they gave the Niners so much momentum when they got stopped. I mean, like you said, Gore had the one big run, but 17 for 84, so not bad for him. I think, you know, the difference is when you have Crabtree, you got to pay attention to him. So then guess what? The veteran, Anquan Boldin, who's putting together a Hall of Fame career just with, you know, overall stats, but then also how he plays in the playoffs. He's one of the most clutch receivers in the playoffs.
Yeah, he
eight
basically won Joe Flacco an MVP and $20 million contract because we see what Flacco's doing without him. So, yeah.
No,
this
Anquan's the man. And let me ask you this. What'd you think about, I mean, obviously, you know, Kaepernick, he does the Superman thing. But, you know, these guys are both great. But I got to tell you, Kaepernick, Jim Harbaugh is, you know, first 3 years going to the NFC Championship. That's, you know, a record for a coach. But he knew what he was doing when he got Kaepernick and put him in, and it's paying off. So the Niners are back, as we both predicted, to the NFC Championship. So kudos to them.
Yeah, and think about this. They lost in the NFC Championship game 2 years ago to the Giants. They won last year and then lost in the Super Bowl. So if you believe in trends, then as Ray predicted, they could go. If they win this week, they might win in the Super Bowl and then be the Super Bowl champs. But we still have time to talk about that. But let me give you a couple thoughts I had on this game. Number one, I felt like it's almost like week one when Green Bay tried to intimidate San Francisco, and Kaepernick said after the game in his press conference, he says, well, if you're going to try to use intimidation on us, then you should probably find another tactic. So I feel like Carolina tried to stand up to the bully, and it took them out of their game a little bit. And I felt
Anquan got them out of their game. Anquan talked so much stuff.
Yeah, I felt like they were able to talk and still stay within themselves, San Francisco. And I felt like Carolina, maybe because they were younger, maybe because they were inexperienced, were talking just as much, but they got out of their element and had a couple horrible penalties. So Carolina, it was 12-4. Frankly, I don't think they're that good. I don't think they're
a great season. Look at D'Angelo Williams, Ray. 13 yards on 5 carries. They have no running game.
Yes, but I don't think they're a 12-4 team. I don't think they're an elite team. In fact, next year they may not even make the playoffs. They may not even
make
the playoffs.
No, they're going to get better. They're going to make the playoffs next year because that defense travels.
Well, the defense travels, true, but remember, they still play in a division with Tampa Bay,
great teams,
who's going to be better next year, and also Atlanta and Matt Ryan and Julio Jones coming back and Steven Jackson another year in that offense. But anyway, great season for Carolina. They're young. They need more weapons on offense, but they can hold their heads up high. They won their division 12-4, and really a great season for them. So nothing to be ashamed about in Carolina. We'll talk about college basketball in Carolina. That's something else.
Well, Carolina sports right now is taking a hit, right? The Tar Heels, the Dukies, they're taking a hit. I just want to say this, though. This is what bothers me because, first of all, both teams, I don't know if you saw a story on Navarro Bowman and, you know, found his biological family, his father, and his father was killed, and the guy who shot him and said self-defense and drove right past him. He found his half-sister and family. It was amazing. And then he goes out, and his family is in Charlotte, and he has a great game for his family. 5 solo tackles, 11 total. You know, he gets the sack. He gets, you know, tackles for losses. Navarro Bowman is – him and Willis are just amazing, and Brooks. But then the Panthers, they are so okay with Davis – Hardy, they got to re-sign. Lou Kuechly, Charles Johnson, you got Mitchell, Mutterlink, Captain Mutterlink. That's, by the way, he needs to be in our top five. We got to put him in the all-name squad. Anybody that names their son Captain, you got to like that. But I just think the Panthers, and we spoke about it, they need help because this guy played good. Steve Smith was hobbling and still got you 74 for, 4 for 74. Ted Ginn Jr. against his old team, 4 for 104. So, they need some help. They definitely need some more talent. So let's go to Saturday, man. Poor Panthers. But they're not ready.
Well, still a 12-4 season. That's not all.
Yeah, no. But you lose a home playoff game, it stings. It does sting, especially to a team that you beat during the season. Even though the Niners are better, you were at home. So the Patriots, ladies and gentlemen, 43-22 over the Colts. This was a teaching moment, a lesson. It's Belichick teaching. It's Brady teaching, and it's just what you can do with whatever talent you have. And I think that's what we learned here. When you got Blunt getting you, 4 touchdowns? And
166 yards.
Ridley getting you a touchdown. And guess what they did? They tried to lock Hilton. Yeah, Ridley too, yeah. But they tried to lock Hilton. Give T.Y. Hilton some credit. It's only 4 receptions, but he still got 103 yards, so... Him and Luck tried to ball out a little bit. Luck, great season, 331 yards, but it was just, the 4 interceptions, 2 touchdowns. It's. I think what we're seeing here is teams that next year can take the jump are the Colts and the Panthers. They need a couple of key pieces, secondary, O-line, receiver. And both these teams are very similar, maybe even the same in terms of their needs. And I think they can turn the corner. I think Cam Newton and Luck are in that position to go further next season with just a little bit more help. So I thought it was a great game. And I what can you say? Kudos to Brady and Belichick and what they do with nothing. And, Edelman gives you, 6 receptions and, not much in the receiving, but Big win.
They didn't need it. They ran the ball 46 times for 234 yards.
Yep.
Yeah, but he didn't need it. He still had a productive offense that put up 43 points. So
yeah.
It just shows you that, Chris Carter had a good point. So shout out to Chris Carter. He said, on the one hand, we say these guys, the Patriots, have strict discipline, and if you don't do something, you get benched, and the guy coming off the bench plays. But give Belichick credit as the GM also and the player personnel guy to have bench players that are quality, that are prepared, that know his system, and when called upon can fill in. So remember, this team lost, of course, Hernandez in the beginning of the season and Gronk, and Vince Wilfork, and Gerard Mayo, and Keep Tlaib for parts of the season, and Danny Amendola for parts of the season. I mean, that's just kind of the big-name players. And in between, they've lost, everybody gets banged up the normal course of an NFL season. And next man up, not only is next man up, but next man up is prepared, ready, knows the system, and produces. So, I mean, it's really, look, Belichick won two Super Bowls as an assistant to Bill Parcells, and then he's 3-2 himself in Super Bowls. And if he this year gets to another Super Bowl, win or lose, I mean, I don't know how this guy doesn't really just separate himself from every other.
Well, Bill Cowher said it when he interviewed him on CBS. He said, Coach, I got to tell you, you will go down as the best and the greatest head coach in the NFL history. And I have to agree. No disrespect to Landry, Knoll, and Lombardi, but
Bill Walsh,
the guy right
even.
There. Bill Parcells. Belichick's the guy, man. I got to give it to him. Yeah, so that was great. And, you know, it's setting up so nicely. The AFC, you got the Denver Patriots, and then the NFC, you know. Let's talk about it. This is the one where Ray and Tay differed. 23-15. You know, I think Ray went out on a limb, and I give him credit for it. He went with the Saints. I just didn't think they had enough to go up there. But one thing I will say about this game and Drew Brees and the Saints, they definitely came up there with a plan, and I tell you, it was hard. Graham got his, like, one reception in the, like, last drive in the fourth quarter, or two receptions, whatever he wound up with. But Brees gets you 309. He gets you a touchdown. But the thing about Seattle, when Lynch can carry it 28 times and get you, you know, $140 and two TDs, Seattle's not going to lose, ladies and gentlemen. Because Russell Wilson – He just doesn't make the big-time mistake. And he can scramble and move the clock and extend plays and get first downs. And Drew Brees does it, too. Did it, you know, once in a game and still looks down the field and makes the throw. But I think that Seattle, in their stadium, they are so prolific at running down the clock and just moving the chains and doing whatever they got to do, whether it's Doug Baldwin or curse. You know, Harvin did a little something. You know, Tate gets you a catch. They just do what they got to do. But I give the Saints credit.
I disagree with this notion that the Seattle's humming on all cylinders. I think these guys
No, I don't think
trouble.
They are.
And
I just think
fact,
they're tough
I'm,
at home.
I'm making it right now. I'm making a prediction right now. San Francisco goes in there and wins because they can beat them at their own game, which is – ball control.
Well, Crabtree's the difference maker. We know that. Yeah.
Keep him in front of you. So I think that Russell Wilson hasn't been playing well. I think that ever since the big blowout win on Monday night against the Saints, so week 16, 17, and then this past week, Russell Wilson isn't playing that great. He is playing okay, well enough to win,
yeah.
but I'm not sure in a tight game against San Francisco, he's going to have to be consistently better than he is against the San Francisco
yeah,
team.
Yeah, 9-18 won't
Niners.
Cut it. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that Seattle has a little bit to worry about, and they need to get some dynamic playmaking potentially out of a Percy Harvin, Doug Baldwin. I don't know, somebody's going to have
not
to step
sure
up.
Not sure Percy's going to go, though, in the game. And that would hurt them. Hopefully he plays. Not sure about that yet. I'll tell you this. You know who was listening to our show or his people, and he had to try to shut up Ray and Tay? A gentleman by the name of Marcus Colston. Because when we talked about the Hall of Fame, Marcus Colston was like, player, is you bugging? He had 11 for 144 on Richard Sherman and the boys and a touchdown. So shout out to Marcus Colston, who we kind of – said is not a Hall of Famer.
Well,
that was a big,
well, look,
big
on.
Performance.
It's no disrespect to say somebody's an all-pro, a great
no,
player.
No, I'm joking. I'm joking. I'm joking.
I'm joking.
But
Hall
listen, that performance,
Hall of Fame.
That performance has to make us eat crow for a minute, though. We gotta eat it. We gotta take a bite of the crow, if not eat it. We gotta take a bite because he stepped up. But I tell you this, you know who I like? I mean, no Pierre Thomas, and I think that really hurt them. And Darren Sproles has disappeared the last half of the season. I don't know if you've noticed this, Ray. He's nowhere in sight. You know, he had the 5 receptions for 32 yards, but he only had, what, 3 carries for 2 yards? I mean, I'll tell you this. This kid, Kyrie Robinson, if he doesn't stay on this roster, he'll be like Chris Ivory that went to the Jets. 13 carries, 57 yards. Kyrie Robinson is a player. And I think he's going to either play more for them next year or play somewhere else. So
yeah,
they might have to get rid of Ingram or
Pierre Thomas, because I think that this kid, Kyrie, needs to get more carries and needs to be a more integral part of that offense. So you go back to the Saints, and let's wrap it up with the Colts. You got to figure they had a very good season. They lose Reggie Wayne in the middle of the season. They trade for Trent Richardson, thinking that would put them over the hump. But, in fact, Donald Brown steps up, and Trent Richardson, give him another offseason before you write him off as kind of a bad trade. But I think that all in all, the Colts need to be happy. Like you said, they need to shore up some things on defense, maybe at the offensive line. Hopefully Reggie Wayne comes back and still has another couple good years in him. But they have themselves a star in Andrew Luck. Yeah, he threw 7 interceptions, but you know what? He's in his second year. And who doesn't get rattled up there in New England? So great season for the Colts. And the Saints, remember, this is a Saints team that was great 2 years ago and then was terrible last year with the whole Bounty Gate scandal. They bounced back beautifully this year. They're not as great on the road as they are at home, so they've got to worry about fixing their woes on the road. But winning in Philly was a big win for them, and I think that for all you Saints fans out there, you got to be happy. Look, the one thing that's scary is the emergence of Carolina. So you're in that NFC South with Carolina, Atlanta, Tampa. I mean, that may be the best division in football. I mean, everybody's talking about the NFC West, but between the NFC West and the NFC South, those two divisions are unbelievable. So great season for the Saints. A lot to build on. Jimmy Graham is unstoppable when he's rolling. It's funny because you don't get anything in the middle. You either get completely unstoppable Jimmy Graham.
He's gotten locked down a couple
of
times this season.
They have to get to the bottom of that. How is Jimmy Graham, being shut down in the 2 or 3 games a year that he gets shut down? Because otherwise, he's unguardable. I mean, we talked about this a little bit in the first half of the season. You could have made a case for, behind Peyton Manning, Jimmy Graham is the MVP. I mean, this guy was unstoppable.
Yeah.
So he's an unbelievable asset. So good job for New Orleans. Good job for Andrew Luck and the Colts. They'll both be back in the mix next year. But we're down to the final four. We'll talk about it on Friday. But I think ultimately these are the best four teams, the best two teams in each conference, even though technically, San Francisco's a 5 seed. They're really the second best team
And we picked both of them to go to Super Bowl and win it. You had them against the Broncos. I had them against the Texans. But I think this is the Niners' year. Let's get to our new segment, man. I think we got a football flavor to it, but it's Where's My Ring? And there are some gentlemen that played the game of the NFL that were amazing. Some of them some of them younger fans might not know. But Ray and I figured we'd come up with a quick list, have a little fun, because, everybody talks about Super Bowl, it's about the ring, right? Well, let's look at some quarterbacks that did not get a ring. And right off the bat, there's a guy that's in the studio on CBS. He does the, the pregame studio show. And no, it's not Boomer, although Boomer's pretty good, and was a couple of seconds away from winning a Super Bowl if the Niners, didn't make that last drive and beat him. And when Joe Montana, was that to Rice or to Taylor? I think it was to Rice. But Dan Marino. So Dan Marino was the record holder of every passing stat that you could think of before Favre, Breeze, and Manning came along. And slowly, have chipped away at a lot of his records. I don't think all of them have gone yet. But at the Dolphins, Dan Marino in, 85, they're the only one to beat the Bears that went on for their Super Bowl win and had them 15-1. Mark Clayton, Mark Duper, Dan Marino was the man out of Pitt and probably still one of the best pure passing quarterbacks we've ever seen, the quick release. But he never went to a Super Bowl. He went in, 84,
He went to one, and he he lost to Joe Montana in 84.
Lost to Montana with the Dolphins.
And he thought that this
he'd
was going to
be,
gonna be he'll be back right. several times, and he never went back. So that's for all you football aficionados. If you're in the Super Bowl, you better take
advantage of
every opportunity to win that, because you never know if you'll be back.
Yeah. But when you think of Marino, right, he went once, but what about someone like Jim Kelly? from Buffalo, went four times and lost all four to the Giants.
Four straight.
To the, what, Cowboys twice and the Redskins once, or who
Cowboys
was
the, twice, Redskins once, and Giants.
And the Giants, yeah.
So he lost
That's
to
hard.
The NFC East four straight years.
Yeah, and dominated in the AFC. That whole Bill team, when you look at Jim Kelly, you know, if we want to talk about defense, you got to give kudos to Bruce Smith. But his triplets, right, the triplets, everyone talks about the great triplets in Dallas, you know, with Emmett, Michael Irvin, and Troy Aikman. Well, Buffalo's triplets, Kelly, Thurman Thomas, and Andre Reed, we're just waiting for Reed this year possibly to get in the Hall of Fame. But those are all-time greats at running back and receiver that don't have rings. Why don't you give me a couple guys that you've thought about
as
a receiver?
Yeah, so apropos Kelly, right, Jim Kelly. So there's another guy, Fran Tarkenton, if you want to go even more old school.
Ooh.
And this guy was the Minnesota Vikings quarterback. And I think that the Vikings lost four, but I think he was the quarterback for the three of them in
three,
the 70s.
Yeah,
so he lost three Super Bowls in the 70s to, you know, some pretty good teams. I guess he lost to Pittsburgh, Oakland, and Miami. So look up Fran Tarkenton. When he retired, he was the Dan Marino or the Brett Favre of the
NFL.
He
was the all-time rushing leader at
quarterback
as well for a long time. Yeah.
Before
Vic and these guys came along. Don't forget about Dan Fouts.
He's unbelievable. What's that?
Dan Fouts. I think Dan Fouts is very underrated at the quarterback position. Air Coryell, your Chargers that you loved. Dan Fouts was amazing. He was the gunslinger before, you know, we talk about Manning and him. He was all offense all the time. Love Dan Fouts.
So a couple running backs. You talk about Thurman Thomas. He's up there. He went with those four Jim Kelly years and lost four straight times. You got to look at Barry Sanders, who may have been the best runner of all time. I mean, depending on where you
Definitely.
Think Jim Brown fits into there, Marcus Allen, Emmitt Smith, you know, all these guys. But if you don't know Barry Sanders, you better check him out. And Eric
Don't
Dickerson.
Forget about my Houston. Oh, yeah.
How about Eric
Dickerson?
He did
the
big
Rams.
Things. For the Rams, the Colts, ended his career with the
Raiders,
Falcons. Yeah, he was a big time.
And he still is the all-time one for one season rushing leader. Remember,
right? Was it 2104?
Adrian Peterson came up nine yards short.
So
Eric Dickerson still has that record. And then before we leave running backs, the number one, love you blue, Earl Campbell. Steelers beat them twice, prevented them, and Dan Pastorini and Earl Campbell, you know, getting to the Super Bowl, never made the Super Bowl, and one of the greatest running backs ever. We, you know, did a show on him. You'd have to look it up, Where You At Wednesdays. But Earl Campbell, the heart and pride of Texas, one of the most bruising backs I think we've ever seen. Tal and I, we love Earl Campbell. Ray and I love Earl Campbell.
Yeah, that's
now, what about
guy.
Some
so
other receivers?
Yeah, so receivers, of course, you got Andre Reed comes to mind as being one of the biggest receivers that didn't make it. T.O., Randy Moss. So in terms of talent, you probably
Moss
combine,
and T.O. both 0-1 in the Super Bowl, right?
Yeah,
they
you
both
combine,
made it once.
Although you could argue T.O. did all he could, right? He broke his leg and then came back right before the Super Bowl.
Had an amazing
Super Bowl against the Patriots, but just fell a field goal short. So, yeah, if you combine T.O. and Randy Moss, that's the ultimate receiver, right? Big, strong, goes over the middle. Randy Moss with the great hands, with the leaping ability,
speed.
With the ability to run fast. And T.O. with his toughness and catching the ball, you know, didn't have the best hands of all time, but certainly the combination of his size, speed, toughness, his physical, you know, body.
They're both future Hall of Famers, without a doubt.
Yeah.
You know who else I've got to mention? He only catches touchdowns. Never made it to the Super Bowl with that 15-1 Viking team that lost to the Falcons, that lost to the Broncos, Chris Carter.
Hall of Famer.
You know, Hall of Famer, yeah. And one guy, Ray, that's playing right now, he's on one in the Super Bowl too, lost to the Steelers, Larry Fitzgerald. He's going to go down as one of the, you know, top receivers of all time, and maybe he'll get a shot. But he hasn't gotten
the
back.
The problem with Larry Fitzgerald winning a Super Bowl is that from – about the third or fourth year, he was one of the highest paid receivers in the game. And I think that, unfortunately for him, his mega contract is one of these that's going to be hard to absorb. So I don't think he'll be able to go to a good team. So he'll have to win a Super Bowl in Arizona. And unfortunately
for
Arizona,
renegotiate. He may have to renegotiate to help the team out to get a little bit more talent.
But he plays in that NFC West, and it's hard to see him coming out of that NFC West. That division is just too tough. So yeah, Larry Fitzgerald, but he's a young guy still. He's probably got 5, 6, 7 good years ahead of him. We probably want to see if Megatron and Stafford ever make it to a Super Bowl and maybe win, if they can get their a little bit more discipline there.
And what about our guy retiring this year? Tony Gonzalez, a tight end.
Of course. Yeah,
best
he's
tight
the tight
end.
Yeah, I mean, you got to figure Kellen Winslow right behind him and Ozzie Newsome. But, yeah, our boy, Tony Gonzalez, yep, goes down as where's my ring? And he came back, in fact, this year. This was his year when he wanted to get that ring.
To get the ring.
It's just too tough, too unpredictable.
You know who I got for you at linebacker? You know, R.I.P., Junior Seau. Went back with the Patriots after all those years in the Chargers.
Put Derek Thomas in that category. The rest in peace
and
category.
Junior Seau got to touch the Super Bowl and lost to the Giants with that Patriot team with Randy Moss. And that
right.
Right there.
He was in 95. He lost to Steve Young, right? The Chargers and the Giants.
Yes, that's
so
right. I almost forget with the Chargers, yeah. That's right, where they shouldn't have gone because they beat the Steelers. Yeah, that was crazy. Yeah. So some good guys, some good memories. Of course, Derek Thomas, rest in peace with the Chiefs. One of the dominating pass rushers of all time, without question. And Derek Thomas.
Bruce Smith also. We got to give Bruce Smith some credit. He definitely did his thing. Went to the 4 straight Super Bowls with the Buffalo Bills. Went to the Redskins at the end of his career. Never really did anything, in terms of getting even close to a Super Bowl with the Redskins. But there were a couple others. Bruce Matthews from the offensive line perspective,
Clay Matthews,
right? He was with
the
Houston and then Tennessee Oilers and Titans. So these guys were all fantastic players. Deacon Jones and Merlin Olsen, right, from the Rams. Those two unbelievable bookend defensive linemen. So there's a lot of players out there in every sport. And you know what?
Yeah.
We'll do this in every sport. We'll do this in basketball. We'll talk about Barkley and Ewing and a whole bunch of people, Karl Malone. But for now,
but
when you look at a guy, just because he didn't win a ring, look
doesn't
at his whole
mean he wasn't
career.
A, wasn't the man.
Right. Look
so
at
let's,
his whole
listen,
career.
Let's take a – let's take a quick break and let's come back with the hot off the press, still a little warm off the press, College Hoops Top 25. Ray and Tate today. We'll be right back.
Hello, and welcome back. We're back to talk College Hoops. AP Top 25 was just released about an hour ago, and no real changes at 1 and 2. So that's Arizona and Syracuse.
Arizona's
the former number 3, Ohio State, loses twice last week to Michigan State and Iowa, and they drop from 3rd to 11th. So Big Ten takes a hit on that one. But number 3 is Wisconsin, still undefeated. Number 4, Michigan State at 15-1. Number 5, the Wichita State Shockers
baby.
At 17-0.
Yeah, still
number
undefeated.
Number 6, the old Big East, Villanova, 15-1. A quiet Number 7,
Gators.
Florida at 13-2.
Billy Donovan.
An up-and-coming Iowa State team at
14-1
is
they
in
host
the number
Kansas
8
tonight.
Yep, and they host Kansas tonight, and then Texas at the end of the week. Number 9 with our boy Smart, Oklahoma State, 14-2. They also play TCU tonight, and then Kansas at the end of the week. And then rounding out the top 10. is Steve Fisher's San Diego State squad.
We were talking about it a couple weeks ago. Climbing up, Ray. I told you.
Yeah, they beat Boise and Air Force this week. So what do you think? What do you think about this top 25?
Well, let me ask you, what's fascinating to me, right, and I have a couple of questions. I mean, obviously Duke is almost dropped out. They went down to 23. I think they only stayed in because they're Duke, right? I don't even think they necessarily deserve it at 12-4. But I want to say this, the Pac-12 and the Big 12. The question is the Pac-12 overrated or underrated? Because you had Oregon and Colorado both lose in the division, you know, to Washington and Stanford. And so the Pac-12 took a little hit there. But, I mean, when you've got Arizona, who beat USC by 20, and then you've got these other teams who are still ranked in Colorado and Oregon, that's sort of my question to you. UCLA is at 25, you know, tied at 25 with Oklahoma. Is the Pac-12 underrated or overrated? What do you think so far with them?
I think they're just fine. I think they're just fine. I think that, you know, at the top, they have an unbelievable, you know, Arizona team. So I think that this Arizona team is probably going to have one of these magical seasons. I don't know if they win it all, but they probably end up going, you know,
well,
32,
Gordon and Ashley inside, both of them, great. You got to like Brandon Ashley and Aaron Gordon.
You figure they're good at the top of the league. And then at the middle of the league, you know, they've got Colorado, they've got UCLA, they've got Oregon, they got Cal. So it's a pretty deep league. And, again, they got one superstar team. So it's not like the Big Ten, let's say, that's got two or three top 10 teams. They got one top five team in Arizona.
Big Ten is tough this year because look at Iowa moving up, right? Iowa's moved all the way up to 14.
For sure. So
with Michigan State
and
Wisconsin and then Iowa and Ohio State, that's –
so I don't know that they're overrated or underrated, but I think they're just fine. I think they're a solid conference. I mean, they're probably the second or third best conference in the country.
Well, I think the ACC is dropping off, and I think the ACC, you could say that they're the fourth best conference. You got the Big Ten, the Pac-12, the Big 12, and then maybe the ACC. Look at the Big 12, Ray. Iowa State, Kansas, Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, Baylor. I mean, the Big 12 is here, ladies and gentlemen. They are here to stay with, what, four or five teams in the top 25? So watch out for Big 12 basketball because it's back. It's alive and well. I'd like to see that.
Tobacco Red is where you got to be most disappointed if you're an ACC fan and if you're a fan of the state of Carolina. But between NC State, North Carolina, and Duke doesn't play D. Carolina seems to only win big games. They're 0-3. Carolina is in the ACC for the first time since 96-97. So
and they're 2-7 combined, Duke and North Carolina.
Yeah, this is a team that Carolina that has two huge victories in terms of beating top 10 teams, but now they're 0-3 in their ACC.
And Duke could lose to Virginia. That Virginia team is not bad.
I think they'll win, though, but this team, you know what it is? This team doesn't have any spirit. This team doesn't play D. This Duke team doesn't play D. They don't really defend.
Not great
they're
small, size.
They're not tough. So they're just these sort of in-between players, and this is not a Mike Krzyzewski team. So he must be pulling his hair out this year.
And Suleiman's not stepping up. And we talked about Andre Dawkins, Johnny Dawkins' son. But speaking of sons, I got to mention – from our boy from 1989 at Iowa, Roy Marble. Well, his son, Roy Devin Marble, averaging 16 a game, was big in the win of Iowa over Ohio State. And that warmed my heart. I'm watching the television, and I'm like, yo, is that Roy Marble's kid? Ray and Tay, we've got our own segments. We've got some great ones, and the fans like them. But we might come up with a new one and be like, yo, is that my kid? Is that, yo, I don't know. But to me, it's great when we watch players and now to see their sons playing the game. As we saw Glenn Rice and these guys, their kids. Larkin from baseball, Glenn Robinson. Yeah. So that's awesome. And guess what, Ray? Massachusetts is hanging in there at number 16. So that's good to see. So what do you think, just looking at some of these matchups this week, any games that really – obviously tonight, the Iowa State-Kansas is a huge game. Do you think like maybe Louisville this week, they're playing against Connecticut. That right there, that's going to be fun. And the Connecticut is right outside the top 25, but I think Louisville's got to watch out. That's one game that I'm looking at that might be kind of interesting.
Wisconsin plays Michigan in the Big 12. I guess Michigan State plays Illinois. These are all sort of borderline top 25 games. Oklahoma State, Kansas, I think to me is one of the better games that I'm definitely looking forward to. That's going to be later on in, later on during the week.
And what about the
Saturday.
Second leading scorer, Ray? What about our boy Doug McDermott playing against Butler?
Fresh?
Yeah, they play Butler tomorrow on the 14th, right? And that right there, that's going to be that should be kind of fun. Creighton is a team that people sleep on, but I think Dougie McDermott, man, he's second leading scorer in college basketball, but he's really developed into more of a. I think that look, it's great when these guys stay 3-4 years, right? They can develop their game. And so I think his game is getting more NBA ready, but in the college, he could have a big run in the tournament this year. So I'm glad Creighton is playing good ball at 14-2.
You know what else will be interesting to me is Pitt, Syracuse. So
oh,
they
yeah.
always play tough battles. I mean, it's like Syracuse, Georgetown, Syracuse, St. John, Syracuse, Pitt. But here's the thing. Syracuse, Pitt playing for the first time as members of the ACC. That's a little nauseating to me. But I'll still watch the game.
Right.
Because it's still a top 25 game. You know, Pitt's
and
ranked
still Pitt, Syracuse.
22nd. Syracuse ranked number 2. So at the Carrier Dome this Saturday, Pitt-Syracuse. So we'll keep our eye out on that.
Yeah, you got to keep your eye out on that. And, it's fun. And we'll have to get our guy, Seth Davis, from Sports Illustrated and CBS Sports to come on and talk some college hoops with us because he was great this time last year, talking about Duke and just, breaking down UCLA and everything. So we'll look forward to hopefully getting him back on to join us. But, it's time for us to clap boards, cross it over, and dunk it. And this is what the guys do in the NBA. The Miami Heat just had a little rough run. Now, it's no big deal. They're going to be fine. Everybody knows. But they came up, people make that trip to the Texas Trio Triangle, or you go to Florida and play Orlando, Miami. Well, they came up to New York, and they played the Knicks and then Brooklyn. And the Heat lost both those games. Big win over the weekend after we spoke, we talked about it Friday, Thursday. But then Friday, the Nets – Sean Livingston is back, Ray. What do you think about the Nets playing good? We know our boy can't stay healthy, Deron Williams, but what do you think about the Nets turning it around a little bit, winning, 4 or 5 out of the last 6 and playing some good ball?
I think the Nets are just in a slugfest, and all year they're just going to scratch and claw. At first I thought they were going to turn it around and go on a winning streak because the Eastern Conference is so weak. But I think now it's just a matter of accumulating enough victories to be in the playoffs. I think the minute Brook Lopez went down and the fact that Deron Williams can't stay healthy, Garnett and Pierce are a shell of what they used to be. So this team is fundamentally just not, they have Joe Johnson, but he's limited in his impact on the rest of the team. So This team is just a matter of getting to the playoffs. So they're 15-22 now. They just got to get themselves 35-40 wins, hope to get into the playoffs, and then see what they can do. Hopefully, Deron Williams
can
come back.
They're a playoff team right now, which is amazing.
Yeah. Look, they could be 8, they could be 11, they could be 4, they could be anywhere in between, right? So to me, it's just a matter of win every game you can and hope it's enough to get you potentially a home playoff game. And if not, then you got to win a series on the road and, hope that all that money that they spent can actually do something in the playoffs. But yeah,
I
want to
hear some excitement from you because our Knicks are half a game out of the playoffs. I want to hear Ray be excited about the Knicks, baby.
Well, I'm excited because we don't own our draft pick, right? So if we're not going to have the pick, then it might as well win
playoffs.
Some games because we're not going to get an Andrew Wiggins or a Jabari Parker. So, look, the Knicks won 4 in a row. Anytime – no matter what your record is, if you're 72-10 like the Bulls were in 96-97 when Michael Jordan came back, or if you end up winning 20 games, four in a row is still four in a row. That's nice. So the Knicks are another team that just has to figure it out. I think this whole J.R. Smith thing is behind them now. They can just go out and play ball. And
it's
now it's just a matter of, again, like the Nets, it's just piece together wins, you know? I wanted them to set an establishment and establish an identity for themselves. I don't know if they'll be able to do that because Amari Stoudemire is in and out of the lineup. Raymond Felton was in and out of the lineup with injury.
Chandler.
Kenyon Martin's, you know.
Hey, Bunyarni is the most consistent Nick besides him and Mello. And now Shumpert, Bunyarni's
you know
had a pretty good season.
You know what? I have no problems with Andrea Bargnani. I mean, to his detriment, he was the number one overall pick, right? So people have these expectations for him. But once you take that, once you forget about where he was drafted, and you just say, look, the guy is a solid, you know, NBA big man, not your traditional big man, doesn't really play big, but certainly is a presence offensively, doesn't rebound as much as you'd like and doesn't have as much of a presence.
Surprisingly, he does
man.
Block some shots, though. And
yeah.
He's had a couple of games this year with multiple blocked shots.
So I'm not disappointed by Andrea Bargnani, and I think that we're you know, other than his big salary number, I think without him we'd be in big trouble because our front court can't stay healthy. So in that respect, four wins in a row as a Knicks fan, you got to take it and just keep chugging along, try to get out of 7 or 8, and try to be somewhere between 3 and 6 in the NBA playoffs, and then hopefully you can even win a first round series.
So I got a couple of quick hitters for you. Number one, Phoenix plays the Knicks tonight. So, you know, I'm sending my boys to New York to come bring you some sunshine, and I think Phoenix is going to give the Knicks some trouble. But I'll tell you this, interesting, two things. In the last 10 games, obviously we know how hot Golden State has been. They're 9-1. And then you look at OKC without Westbrook. They're 6-4, so they're down to the third seed now, dropping a little bit. But just to dig at Ray a little bit, ladies and gentlemen, I got to point out, 3 in a row from the Sacramento Kings, and they've beat the Heat, they've beat some other teams, but the Sacramento Kings are 6-4 in their last 10, and I'm hyped up about the Sacramento Kings, ladies and gentlemen, even though they're 13-22.
They're taking all the wins that would have gone to Charlotte.
Yo, can I tell you, the Kings are trying to play ball, man. Yo.
They have
that's so bad for the Pelicans.
Let me tell you, for real, the Sacramento Kings have a phenomenally talented roster.
They beat the Cavs
now,
by like 40.
It's
that's
a bunch
impressive.
Of knuckleheads, and they'd win every AAU. They win every AAU tournament ever put on.
I don't know
how this team gels together as a team, but they're very talented. And individually, they're very fun to watch, and they're very talented pieces.
So this is one thing we talked about off-air, and I said for the playoffs, the Suns could use them, the Blazers and the Warriors. But I think somebody, and we're talking about some trade rumors, I think somebody's got to make a move to get like a Spencer Hawes from Philly. I think for Golden State and Portland to do anything to, you know, comparatively to against OKC or the Spurs or even a healthy Memphis when they get it together with Gasol, who might be back in a week or two. I don't know. This guy's been out forever. I think you got to trade for like a Spencer Hawes or somebody. You need a little bang. The Blazers and Warriors need a little bang off the bench with size, whether it's at the 4 or the 5. You know, so that'll be interesting.
Too. The problem is that's so scarce. You can't find those guys. So we'll see. Spencer Hawes, that's a good pick, especially considering Philly's all about rebuilding. And if Nerlens Noel is a player, then maybe he's expendable. But the problem is you get awfully small if you're Philly and you get rid of Spencer Hawes. So that's the downside from Philly's perspective.
Yeah, no, it is. It definitely is. I tell you, one thing that I love about the NBA, you know, you have bad losses, you got to come back and fight and turn it around the next day. And, you know, you see, you know, these teams doing it. I'm sort of curious to see, you know, how the Celtics keep developing. Brad Stevens is doing a heck of a job. They played tonight against the Rockets. Mm-hmm. Rockets have been pretty solid, but I got to give Brad Stevens a little shout-out to what he's doing. The rumors of Thibodeau leaving the Bulls and going to the Knicks, he's been squashing that. I don't know where these stories come from. I think in the middle of the NBA season, January, February, they just make up some stories, Ray, to, you know, generate something. You know, I don't know. But, you know, the rookie point guards are starting to play ball. Shane Larkin and Trey Burke. I wanted to shout
good
them
for
out.
Them. Good for them. Yeah. It was all the Michael Carter Williams show for the first couple months of the season. But good to see those other point guards stepping up.
Yeah, well, it was always, you know, for them, it was just getting on the court, right, getting a little healthy and playing because they just have not been able to do so. They haven't been healthy at all. So, you know, that's always a good thing. And we'll have fun, good show, and we'll have some fun on Friday. We'll talk some more hoops, but it's going to be all about the National Football League, AFC and NFC championships. So we'll probably be back on around our regular time. Check out our, you know, Twitter and look at rayandtaytoday.com. But we'll be back Friday, 5 or 6 Eastern, and Ray and Tay will give you our predictions to who is going to the Super Bowl.
Yes,
it's already here, Ray.
Have a great sports week, and we'll
definitely
see you on Friday.
Thanks for talking sports with friends. We're out.